Welcome to Working Dog Radio, broadcasting the bite.
Hey guys, Alicia with Working Dog Radio here again. I wanted to take a moment to talk about one of our newest sponsors, someone that we are super, super happy with and glad to have aboard, somebody that we have known since they literally got into the game. Aiden and Jesse from Rex Specs literally made a product so that they can enjoy life with their dog. Their dog suffered from panis and they wanted to take their dog skiing. And they went out and they made goggles that fit their dog. And now they make products for your dog, my dog, and everybody's dog. And we've watched them grow and we are so proud of them and proud to know them. All their products are American made. They are supporting us who support them. These goggles are UV protectant. They protect your dog's eyes from dust, from particles, from anything that could get in the way. If you take your dog to the range, one of the products that Ted and I use most often is their Ear Pro. They have canine Ear Pro. It pulls over your dog's head and it protects their ears. So if you go to the range, you're doing gunfire acclimation, whatever you're doing, those things work great. They have leashes. They have all kinds of cool stuff. You really need to check them out. And we are very glad to have them aboard and very proud of their products. We do have some. We will give some away. Keep watching for us. If you check them out on the socials, it's at Rex Specs, S-P-E-C-S, the letter K, the number 9, and also rexspecs.com. If you use the discount code WORKINGDOGRADIO, all one word and all lowercase, you'll get 20% off your first order.
Working Dog Radio, we are back broadcasting the bite from the Hold the Line Canine Conference here. As always, I am Eric Stambro with Ted Summers, who just I taught this morning. Ted just got done. How'd it go, Ted, in your class?
Good. I was upstairs. Did the scenario based training thing again. Yeah, had some good questions. Everybody wants that document that I have that has all the time on bite stuff on it, and so I sent everybody. Don't send me dick pics. If you like, put my phone number up there. I'm like, don't do it. So
you might get one.
You might, exactly. So who do we have with us today?
So with us today is our buddy Todd Mona from Connecticut. He has been a friend of ours for a while. He's been on the podcast before. I wanted to get him on because I've been doing, you know, my tone avoidance seminars all over the country. And one of the first ones I ever did taught was at Todd's place and at a big event he has over in Connecticut every year. And I taught the tone avoidance stuff, and I've taught, if you haven't heard, I've talked about it on this podcast. I talked it out on Working Dog Depot with Howard, and I've talked it on about it on Police Canine Radio with Rich and Greg, and kind of deep dive it in there, the way I teach tone avoidance, where tone is a negative marker, followed by stim, where you teach the dog to leave stuff alone through tone as a warning, and then I use it to create a nice out of a toy and a verbal out of the bite, where it's out, tone, stim, paired that way, and then eventually there's no stim and no tone in the out. When I taught it to Todd, he completely ran with it in a little bit different direction, the way he does it. So I wanted to get him on today to talk about how he took it and what the way he does it. It's pretty good. It works really, really well.
So I'd like to thank you, first of all, for giving me the balls to actually do it. Because right? I had heard about it actually here at this conference about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever it was, and then watching you and listening to you talk about it and stuff. So what I found amazing was, is that in the way I do it is slightly off from yours, but the dog understands and the dog learns that the meaning of tone in the context of which you're training. So if I can give an example so the listeners can understand, this came to me during an exercise, and I teach like obedience, and like I started at about week 5 or 6 in my academy. But they had already been around the e-collar. They already understand that part. So I'm kind of free shaping them a little bit. Everything is off leash a lot in the beginning with my class. But one of the dogs, he was telling them to out the ball. And we had done, I like to work on the table, ball for ball, out for out, you know, and you build up your, you know, to a wedge, to a bite pillow, to a sleeve. So the dog is getting out for out for out. We're just trying to help the dog understand what we're asking. And obviously tone is a big, big part of that, right? So what happened was we were doing an obedience exercise, and one of the guys told his dog to out. The dog didn't out, and I toned him. He outed, and he was already ready to. So the dog was shitting on him, basically. But the dog had done a couple reps of walking obedience, and what ended up happening was the dog outed, and then he returned to the heel, and we had never asked him to return to the heel. So that's when I was like, that was my aha moment for the collar. I was just like, damn, this value to tone that the dog has, I was just like, is a lot more than what I originally had anticipated and thought it could be. And I know this sounds a little crazy, but like we always were taught, you know, you have that 1 to 2 seconds of timing and reward and punishment and command and punishment. And so I started to play like a little bit of a game. And when we did the same exercise a little bit later, I started counting and I made it up to about 8 1,000s. And then I hit the tone and the dog returned to the heel position because he understood in what was going on that we're doing obedience. We're going to start at a heel. And it was just amazing that the dog would not only out the ball, but get back into position without being told so. Because if you held the tone for just a little bit longer than normal, he started to realize this wasn't going away. So I started playing around with it because everything was like a trial and error, you know, that first class I did it. So it was just so powerful how it went. And then basically the difference is what we're getting at in this podcast is the difference where is I can't expect every handler to kind of get to the tone button if they're in an aha or like an oh shit moment. So what I started to do is I started to overlay the dog's name with tone. So it has the value. The two are overlaid. And then as time goes on, I start to phase out the tone a little bit. But the beauty of it is that if the dog ever starts to shit on the handler again, you go back to the tone and it's like almost immediate. They're like, okay, I won't fuck up again. And then you'll kind of just do a variable of the tone and dog's name, tone and dog's name, and you'll get the same response. And yes, it's a preparatory in a way, but it's okay because the dog is completely understanding it and it's working to our advantage because you're able to use the e-collar at such low level stims and you're just like fine tuning them to almost like, you know, perfection in a sense. And there's no conflict with having the out. There's no conflict with the handler because I choose to do it with the leash off. So what we end up doing is whether you're doing bite work or you're just doing ball play or you're doing obedience, when the dog hears his name, he stops fucking around and doing what you don't want him to do. And he kind of already will like take himself and put him back into where you need him to be. And then the beauty of it is like on the opposite end of the spectrum, you could say the dog's name and produce the reward. So like it has so much different meaning to the dog at opposite ends of the spectrum, yet it all works and it makes sense to the dog. That's the part that I can never fully understand unless you got inside a dog's head, if that makes sense to the listeners. Mm-hmm.
So when you're pairing, is it a name, tone, and then followed by stim when you're trying to build that in the beginning of
it? Yeah, it's kind
of
like the e-collar. Like, you know, first you gotta use it to teach the dog, mm-hmm. you know, that he's got to turn the pressure off. And then later on, you can use it as the correction, right? So it's a kind of like the same way with the tone. I was like, I'd start to use it. And then we would, if not, there'd be a correction. But then eventually it's just tone. It's just crazy how fast it goes. And you can get away with using stim much, much like 10 times faster than if you ever just use the e-collar by itself.
Ray Allen Manufacturing is one of our longest relationships that we've had, especially me. I'm just kidding. We love Ray Allen. They are everything dog. And I don't care if you have a pet, the tiniest pet all the way up to the gnarliest canine, these guys make it. They manufacture their stuff. Matt said back there, hand sewing things. We've seen it. They invent products. They collaborate with other trainers who think that they might have a product that the world needs to see, and they'll make it. They are awesome to work with. They are innovative. They are professional. They are fantastic to work with. Every one of Torchlight's dual purpose dogs goes with an Icon vest. They're fantastic. We order from them all the time. If you guys are looking for a discount code for Ray Allen, please go to rayallen.com and use RAMWDR, all caps. That's Ram WDR for 10% off. And check out the line of muzzles that I make specifically for them. I think you'll like them.
So when you're teaching them out of the toy or out of the, say, the decoy, is it name and tone followed by out stim? Or does the name or tone become out?
It all depends. So like I'll do the tone first because I teach tone first. So as soon as tone starts, then they'll start to say their name. And I do probably do a little bit in excess in the beginning. So I'll let them say the dog's name like two or three times. And then by like the end of the week, we're at tone one dog's name or just the dog's name once. And then bang, it happens. So, and eventually, like I said, we just variable it up to kind of proof it that tone still works and the dog's name still works. And then from there, we're just, we can, by the time we hit the road, we should just be able to say the dog's name and it has that same value as tone.
So they'll do, the name is the tone warning on the out.
Yes. And it, what's crazy is it, like I said a little while ago, it has just as good of value to the dog when it's time to get a reward. So that's what's weird too.
Yeah. I haven't even messed with that. So one thing I was kind of fooling around with just because I watched a dog one time was doing down tone stim over and over again. So that when you put the dog in a down and he goes to get up, you hit tone, he goes back. Like he remembers the last command. Is that kind of how yours is working?
100%. And that's what was so groundbreaking for me is that when you were doing, or when I was doing it and I was counting the 1,000s, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, and the dog was making the conscious decision on his own to do the last thing you asked. So whether it was out and he finally outs, and then he's already moving to the next step in the evolution. Like granted, the dog is understanding what we're doing in training, but he's kind of putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And I think that's directly correlated with not using stim because the tone is avoiding stim. If the dog can do what you want to do or ask him to do. So it kind of clears up and there's no conflict there. There's no, you know, tactile that is coming from the collar, so to speak. And then he can just, he's a little bit more clear-headed to be able to do what he needs to do, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
When I use tone, when they understand a verbal out and I use tone because they're lagging on me a little bit, it opens their mouth. Saying their name does the same thing?
Yes, absolutely.
So you're like when your mom is pissed at you and she tells you to do something and then she says your first and middle name. Now you fucking know.
Sure.
You better sure. Put it down. Now, Ted, you sent me a lot of videos of you doing the vibrate function on the dog to e-collar. But what I see from your work is a dog in another room in the dark and then vibrate is the silent out from a distance. Is that how you teach it?
Yeah, we start with teaching vibration avoidance for outing. And eventually I don't do it in a sense, like I don't load the vibration the same way that like tone is loaded that like you talk about where they're like walking around a room and like toning off of things. Mm-hmm. And so eventually what it becomes is recall. I need you to spit out whatever's in your mouth and just come back to me. Right. So eventually vibrate just means out and recall. And in reality, if we're outing a dog on the street, like if they're in a building or if you're outing the dog, like from a vehicle extraction or whatever it is, even if he's on leash, there's not very many situations where I could think where it would be a good idea to leave the dog there. Like, obviously we've asked the dog to come back because it's a safety concern or because it's something to do with us, the team not being ready to move into a rest or not feeling like it's safe or whatever. So regardless, we've got to have the dog back. We have an unsearched suspect, an unsecured suspect. So if he outs, he's got to come back. So it just then becomes just come back to me. So we teach the out with the vibration avoidance, and then I layer on the recall just like we do with the silent recalls with pet dogs or with the vibration stuff, and the same thing with tone. If you listen to the episode we did with you where we talk about it, you do one tone is precedes a correction, and then a long tone is a recall. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing. So if they're deep in a building and they're biting someone, or if they're deep in a building and they're searching, they give us an alert on the door, they're quiet, vibrate, dog comes back. And so it serves both purposes, an out and a recall. And if they can't recall unless they out. So
true.
I mean, it's kind of like those dudes that only do muzzle work. And I'm like, how do you teach an out? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, you have to bite to out. Well, you have to out to recall. So it just becomes a recall. We just build a behavior chain. And
so when you're doing that, is it a short, then longer and distance wise? I mean,
I start with a known recall, right? So what we'll do is we'll do one of two things. We'll have a dog that has a stable down at a distance. And then we're like dog name here. And as soon as we say dog name, or we say dog name. And as soon as we say here, we layer on vibration, right? And vibration stays until they get to the correct heel position, right? If they don't get to the correct heel position, vibration comes off, slight nick, low level stem, nick, push them into position. down, right, whatever. So then we kind of run through the same protocol that Todd just described, where we start phasing out dog name here and I vary it. So it's dog name here, vibrate all the way back. And then it is just dog name here, vibrate all the way back. And then it's just vibrate all the way back. And on the first couple of reps and the first couple of sessions on reps, when they recall, we usually use a much higher reward value for the silent recall, right? So then I'm pairing the reward with the recall under that condition, and with which quickly goes away to help reinforce and speed it up. And then I phase that out as well. So then it just becomes, I can do either or, like Todd said, we can use his name, and, or if it's an oh shit situation and I can't hit my button, I can just say his name and he'll come back too. So it's the same.
So the reward is a tug, maybe a ball, tug, or something.
Food depends on food. I mean, so we can do food. We get dogs, I'm really hesitant about doing too many reps of recalls to toys, because they build that and then they expect to come back and get rewarded. And if they're coming back in drive, right, I don't want the recall to be so fucking hot that they come back at Mach 10 expecting to get rewarded and expecting to have interaction with the handler, right? So in an actual deployment, like if we're standing on that door over there and I need the dog out here, I need him back to me down, and we've all got guns in our hands, and I don't want him rolling up expecting to have a tug and snag somebody's Glock. Or snag somebody standing there. So I'll typically then make the handler do two or three heel steps and then require like a little bit of focus and then reward that. So we build a bridge a little bit so that, because I mean, I've seen a lot of work of handlers outing dogs to come back to toys. And
what happens when they don't have the toy?
Yeah. And so I like to, and I'm doing it just to let the dog know, because in the initial phase is what you want to be careful of, is because that vibration or that tone has been paired with a correction in the past. So we are asking the dog to, in his mind, I think, be willfully non-compliant. He knows he's not supposed to break it down unless he's recalled. So we have to give the same weight to the vibration on the collar as it comes from our voice. So I use the reward history on rewarding a silent recall on that vibration to build an accurate picture for the dog that this also means the same thing and you're not going to get corrected. So not create conflict and not create confusion. That goes away pretty quickly. Like then it's just like a couple, I mean, it takes, I don't know, 4-ish days, you know, maybe 30, 40 reps of rewarding with variability, right? It's not like every single time, but then after that, it's usually pretty solid.
Every year for the past 4 years, our guys have instructed at HITS Canine Conference. This year is going to be in the Big Easy, guys. It's going to be in New Orleans. And I'm really excited about that. It's going to be August 26th through 29th, 2024. It is packed to the brim with the world's best instructors in covering the most important canine topics. There is no better place to learn. There's no better place to network. If you guys want to meet, greet, and shake hands and grab a beer with everything who's canine, everybody who's canine, this is the place to go. You need to hit Jeff Barrett at 863-529-5113. Go to hitscanine.net and get signed up. Don't miss out on this one, guys. Come buy us a beer. We would love to see you. Come shake our hands. We'll have stuff at the booth for you. We'll see you at HITS.
So when you're doing it out from the decoy back to you, do you ever have the decoy walk in and reward the dog next to you, the handler, back from where he's at? Or is it a resend?
I'll play the bouncing decoy game, which those listening don't know what that is we have two decoys and the handler's in the middle, and we'll ask the dog to send to a bite, out, recall, or maybe out and come back and then go past the handler to the next decoy, which is basically it's two ball with people. Yeah. And then we'll vary even there. Dog name, no vibration, recall, and the next one will be silent. And then, so we'll have like little cards that will hold up. Like if one of my trainers holding up a card has one on it, that means verbal. They do another one where they write V and then they write T for verbal and tone, or vibration and tone. They have two separate ones that they set up depending on which collar we're using, but they'll hold a card up and the handler will be like tone, vibrate, recall, and then both. Then they'll say do it both at the same time. So with 3 minutes, you can do 8 to 10 bites, 8 to 10 reps on the bouncing decoy game and vary both recalls, vibration only, voice only, and then both together again, and you can vary it and you can reward each one as a bite, but that's usually towards the other portion. Then we layer it on with a recall So we do the whole recall protocol thing, like the stopped attack or the call off or whatever you want to call it. We send the dog for a bite, slick floors. And if the dog is pretty good on the recall, we'll just dog in here, vibrate, you know, in the same, same section. Usually what we'll do is somebody else will run the collar for the handler and we know when to apply it. And then we run the same procedure again. So as soon as he sends, right. And you know, when you hear Justin Rigney talk about it, and we've talked about it before too, auditory exclusion is a thing. That's one thing that I think is really good about this is for a call off. Like once the dog is locked, he's in prey lock. Like if you listen to Bradshaw talking about it, he's in prey lock, he's going, he may not hear, or if he does, he's not processing it. But now I've got two things, dog name here, I've got vibrate and I've got recall at the same time that I can then override auditory exclusion for a dog that's in, got vapor prey lock.
Well, I bet the dog tra vibrate brings them fuckers back fast.
Yeah.
Strong. Now, Todd, real quick before we're done. So everybody understands when you're teaching this, when you're got it, right? You've been working it. It's going good. You say, you tell the dog to out. He does it. You give, say his name. What is happens if he doesn't out on his name?
It depends what stage I'm at. So like if it's a dog that's out of the academy and everything, and he knows the shit, he's just fucking around, then yeah, we're going to go right to a correction. During the academy, you got to be more lenient. It's just like,
yeah,
like
yeah,
raising right. kids, you know, you got to, and every dog's different. Like if a dog's just maybe he's perfect all the time or looking good for you all the time. And then maybe this one time he's like, nah, I'm really doing good in this fight here. I don't want to leave it. Maybe I offer him the tone before I go to the correction.
The so correction.
It's a yeah. balance, just like with every dog, you know?
And you can tell once you're doing this a lot, you can tell, you can see when the dog's close or when they're kind of slow rolling you a little bit. A lot of those I'll slap them with a little bit of stim to open their mouth up. And the next rep is always a little bit cleaner. Did you find doing this, you went from, you know, higher stims to a pretty low, routinely lower stims on dogs?
Yeah.
Or is it dependent?
Overall, if you want to kind of just make it easier to understand, overall drastically reduced it. I was using the collar way more before tone, way more. And then of course, you know, we had talked about this in the past, different collars, you know, have like a different pattern based on their, you know, the way it's one's a push, one's a pull, you know, and nothing was like one guy would have this collar, another guy would have a different brand, and then you'd be playing around. So basically I'm on the same collar now. I know it very well. And that's how I do it. It's going to be, you know, some dogs get the tone. Some dogs have to go right to stim because they know it. And now they're shitting on me. Or, you know, just like you said, the dog's a little sticky, maybe give them a little flick, it's out and then it's good. So it is a balance, but that's basically in a nutshell, how I'll
that's,
get around the problem. But overall, it's way less collar work. And they're just so much more clear. You're not getting that dog that gets lost in
the fog of power, really.
Yeah. And there's no, I rarely hear a dog whine on a bite anymore. Like rarely, like their vocals are almost gone.
Yeah.
And if there is a vocal, it's because of previous bad training that stuck around. It's like programmed in them to fucking whine and scream on the bite because they're preparing for an out. And then that's just all stuff that goes away.
We, in this conversation, like the problem you mentioned, Eric, is a generalization problem, right? Like when we tell a dog to sit, like you hear people all the time like, oh, he's great at home, like for pet dogs anyway. But when I take him out in public, he does this. So it's a generalization problem in terms of like, I understand like here means to perform the known behavior. But when some of the context changes, either we're off leash or the handler's out of sight or the distance is greater, there's some metric in the dog's mind that has changed. It's a generalization problem. The dog has demonstrated that he understands the behavior, but he's also demonstrating that he doesn't generalize the behavior in that context. And this method, both vibration and tone, cleans it up a lot. And where I find it is one, the dogs, like they don't 100% know how the e-collar works. They just know, like at first they learn, they're like, okay, you can control me from a distance. Right? Like even without the leash, but then they're under the impression that it's like, just because you can't see me. Right. So then we get a little further and we've dealt with that a lot. And I literally, what I'll do is give the remote to the decoy and we'll yell loud enough, dog name here. They're literally my decoy will, or we'll have somebody in the room, like in a closet or something. We're peering through the thing where we're running the remote and the handler is out of sight of the dog is out of sight of the handler. Dog still thinks that it's being run, but he's like, then it helps the generalization process much better. I've seen it 1,000 times at HRDs where the dogs will out
magnificently if they're on a line or if they think the handler is close enough to see them do it, right? Like if he's like, yo, if you don't see me do it, then how can you correct me? So, or I mean, that's the humanized version of it, but this way the generalization comes very quickly because they're like, oh, you can, now you can see through walls and now you can see what I'm doing it all the time.
One of the reasons I really started doing the tone stuff was I just got tired of being high stem, you know, dog trick dogs up in the 80s, 90s, 100s, you know, six high, seven high on the Garmins. And when I go around the country teaching this stuff, I always ask people, okay, so give me a guess. What's your guess on the, when we start to out the ball, give me your guess. I think he's going to be a five high. And by the end of the session, we're at maybe a two low, you know, we're trying to get there, or maybe in the teens on the dog trick call, or nothing really, honestly, nothing. Like the last stim we give them is a lower stim. And I do find, just like you said, the dogs get quieter and they will accept it. If they slow roll you and you have to tap stim, they'll accept it's fair. Because you did tell them out and they're like, yeah, I wanted you to make me, you made me cool. So that's what we're talking about. So if you're out there listening and you are like, man, I'm just fucking smoking this dog on the collar all the time. And we got a lot of problems. You walk up on the dog and the dog's spinning away from you on the decoy and all these other problems. And you're obsessing over this verbal out and you find yourself high stem and screaming. The dog lets go, goes all the way to the end of the bite and just holds on and screams. Contact me. Ted, Todd, where we do this, we teach this all over the place. We'll go anywhere, you know, for this type of stuff. If you like the way I do it, if Todd's way sounds perfect for you or the way Ted does, because you're rocking that dog trick collar, give him a call, man. And guys, it doesn't take months or weeks. You can get this going in days.
The other thing that you mentioned that I want to say is like the how negative first reinforcement, how attempting to use the collar. So like if you're heavy handed with it and try to burn the dogs off and your timing is bad, you end up negatively reinforcing noncompliance. So we tell the dog out and he doesn't out and he times the collar out. And now we've just created the seatbelt problem where
you just learn to hold on and then it feels good when he stops.
So now we've created, you know, a negative reinforcement and the release of the pressure for noncompliance.
Mm-hmm.
So not the way to do this is not slap the collar on the dog and plug him in like a Christmas tree until he outs.
Yeah, actually there's a lot of dogs in my group that were taught e-collar completely different before I went to tone. So I think a lot of handlers out there like might listen and go, hey, I'm just going to put the dog on the bite and we're going to figure this out and we're going to use tone. It's like, no, you got to take all the steps backwards and maybe go to a tie out. Or on a bite box or something of that effect, and just working on a very low item, valued item. So, you know, maybe for one dog, it's the ball. Maybe for one dog, it's a pillow or a tug. Whatever it is, just start very low value. Don't start on the man is what we're trying to say. And just get your reps in till the dog just starts to figure it out. And then he's literally outing on his name or tone or both. And then from there, the progression is up the value. So that's how I do my classes. I start very, very low. I start with two guys, two balls, and then I go to one guy, which is, I usually don't like using the handler. I just, cause I want them to make the way to the decoy. So it's neither here nor there, but you know, then you move to the tug, start with the ball, move to the tug again, two guys with the tug, then one guy with the tug, and then, go to the bite pillow, two guys, then one guy, and then you're on two sleeves, one sleeve, and then you're on two decoys with the suit and you're on one guy with the suit. Before you know it, that's only taken like a day or two and your dog is outing. You should be able, if you're not dropping 30, 40 points on your Dogtra or like three or four on your Garmin, you're doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. But that's the results.
Sucks.
That's the results you can expect and should see if you do this right. So, and again, the only reason I choose to overlay it is just because I'm still out on the road working a dog and I don't have the best coordination all the time. And there's no way in an oh fuck moment that I'm going to be able to get to my button, So, I mean, that was just my train of thought of kind of doing it. And I always liked having value to my dog's names ever since my first dog. So, I just figured it would go together pretty well. It has made leaps and bounds for me in terms of how fast I can get things done. And I think it can work for 99.9% of the guys out there and girls out there.
Yeah. All right, man. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. This was a good, I've been doing so many of these that this was a perfect timing on this to talk about other ways to work it, but still the same, you know, scientific concept. So, that's it guys. Check out the show notes on the advertisements. Our, discount codes are in there and we're going to record some more. So we'll see you coming from South Carolina. Bye-bye.
You got your reasons. I got my wants. Still got that feeling, but I'm too old to die young now.
Working Dog Radio was graciously granted permission to use this music by Brother Deeg. Be sure to check him out at brotherdeeg.blogspot.com. That's spelled Brother DEEG.blogspot.com. Be sure to buy him a beer at Amazon, iTunes, or CD Baby, or anywhere you stream your music. Working Dog Radio was edited and co-produced by Alicia Brandt.